Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm political reporter Rusty Jacobs. This week, we bring you an extended version of our Week in State Politics Roundtable with Becky Gray, Senior Vice President of the conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield, Executive Director of the progressive NC Policy Watch. The first item up for discussion, the disclosure of North Carolina Republican Party memos revealing strategy for targeting key Democrats with negative campaigning. Democrats had subpoenaed the records as part of their lawsuit challenging the GOP-controlled legislature's elimination of judicial primaries this year. The memos show Republicans see Orange County Representative Greg Meyer as a threat, referring to him as Speaker, and labeling House Minority Leader Darren Jackson as Downtown Darren, suggesting he's out of touch with his suburban Eastern Wake County district. I asked Rob Schofield whether this disclosure would do more than fire up the base of both major parties.
This made me really glad that I don't work in that branch of politics and I'm more in the news and commentary end, because it seems a lot of conspiratorial nonsense in a lot of this stuff. There was even a provision in here where Dallas Woodhouse of the Republican Party had some hypothesis that there was some conspiracy between my organization, NC Policy Watch, and the governor's office on the reporting over Representative Dwayne Hall's unfortunate behavior a couple months back, which was completely nonsense, had no truth whatsoever. So wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the stuff in these memos just don't have any connection to reality. But that's the world of politics in which we work. The folks who do campaigns are, you know, looking over every minute detail and trying to get the every possible advantage they can get. It doesn't seem to me like it's going to have that this is a really big story, but I don't doubt that they have concerns about Greg Meyer being a rising star in the Democratic Party. Darren Jackson seems to me to be someone who's been very safe in his district and been very successful and effective. I don't think he's too worried about this.
Becky, you're shaking your head. Is this more than just political?
No, I'm shaking my head actually in agreement with Rob. This is politics as usual. We've seen during this election cycle, the Democrats have come out and identified the target races in the North Carolina General Assembly that they're going after, that they have designated as possible pickups, mentioned specific legislators that they are targeting. This is just all the same. This is politics as usual. I don't think this is a story. I don't think this is a big deal at all, to be honest with you.
As the May 8th primaries approach, Equality NC, an LGBT advocacy group, announced it will not endorse any state legislature who voted for the HB2 repeal bill. So, Becky, what do you think the impact of that announcement will be?
I'm not sure it's going to have a huge impact, but I will say, you know, I think that advocacy groups need to be true to their mission and they need to stay with their mission. So I really commend Equality NC for doing that. I mean, this was their key issue. They spoke out during all of the debates on this. The fact that they are continuing with this, I mean, I think that's what advocacy groups should do. They should be true to their mission. I'm not sure how big a deal this is going to be honest with you. That repeal of the HB2 bill was strong bipartisan vote in both the Senate. There were, of the 32 senators who voted yes on passing that bill, 9 were Democrats. In the House, 30 of the 70 yes votes came from Democrats. Also, Roy Cooper signed that bill the same day that the General Assembly passed it. So as far as it having a big impact in these campaigns, I don't really see that. But again, you know, this is an advocacy group that's staying true to their mission, and kudos to them.
Rob, do you think no Democrats are quaking in fear?
Well, you know, in primary elections, I could imagine. I mean, I think that's where it's more likely that an Equality NC endorsement or non-endorsement might make a difference, would be in a Democratic primary election. So it's conceivable it could make a difference there. But I think the bigger point is that this just shows sort of the growing importance of the civil rights and equality communities. And it's becoming more the mainstream point of view. These kinds of, we couldn't have had something like this 10 years ago. It wouldn't have been this kind of news and it wouldn't have had the possibility of making this kind of impact. The movement is all in their direction, and I think it's natural that they're starting to speak up very pointedly for their issues and even willing to debate with politicians whom they would normally support and say, come on, guys, you got to be with us on these key civil rights issues.
Education continues to dominate state politics headlines. First, a House subcommittee looking at mental health support in schools proposed expanding staff but did not propose appropriating any funds to add counselors or psychologists. North Carolina lags behind the national recommended student-to-counselor ratio of 1 to 700. The North Carolina ratio is 1 to around 1,800. So, Becky, what can the subcommittee's proposal accomplish without appropriating any funds?
Well, first of all, I mean, this is how the legislative process works, that subcommittees come up with recommendations. Not very often at all do they request actual funding. That's part of the appropriations part of it. So, you know, what we're seeing is the beginning of this short legislative session. I think we're going to see some action on the school safety issue. The governor, of course, has come out with a recommendation and will include in his budget, I think it's $130 million. Then the General Assembly begins to put their budget together. So the fact that there's no money at this point, I don't think is alarming at all. I think the commitment that something needs to be done is significant. And I think that as we go through that appropriations process, we'll see some of that funding come and more specific recommendations, probably taking some that the governor has recommended and then some out of the subcommittee and then some out of other committee discussions. So we're very early in this process. And I think all of this is good news. I don't see anything here that signals to me that we're not going to have some action on this during this short legislative session.
And Rob, that legislative session starts pretty soon. Any chances that Governor Cooper's $130 million school safety funds will be added to the budget?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, the alarming thing about this is that this didn't just happen. This has been years and years in the making of neglect from appropriations committees at the General Assembly of not appropriating money for psychologists, for counselors, for school nurses. All of these line items are just embarrassingly underfunded. We have these absurd ratios in which counselors and psychologists have to run from school to school, and there's no reasonable chance that they could actually provide services. My thought is that Governor Cooper's recommendation is actually very modest, but, you know, I'll tell you, if Governor Cooper came up with a cure for cancer, I'm sure that Senator Berger and Speaker Moore would find something to complain about with it, with respect to it, because I can't think of a proposal that Governor Cooper has had that they have warmly agreed to. So I'm sure there'll be some problem with it, and it's very unlikely that they'll agree to what he's proposing. I sure hope they do. I hope they go even further and solve this and address this problem, because it's a big one, and it's years overdue to be addressed.
I think it's a little early to make those kind of predictions. I think what we've seen in all the committee discussions is this is a very bipartisan issue. So I'm looking forward to some real movement there. But, you know, something else, too, aside from the funding piece of this, there are other things that I think we should be looking at with school psychologists, school counselors. A lot of these require a North Carolina state license in order to practice in North Carolina. And we really might look at those requirements, some reciprocity across other states to make it easier for people to come here. Now, I'm not suggesting that we lower the standards in any way, but there are some ways that we could lower the requirements, the monetary things that it takes to become school psychologist, some of the certification that's required for a state certification to do this. Really need to look at some of those so that we can increase the field of school nurses, counselors, and psychologists.
Reciprocity has been an issue that's come up, I think, in the discussion on this issue. Rob, what do you think?
You know, maybe. I don't think that's the real problem here, though. I think the real problem is we just don't have enough money to hire the people. I think we should talk to the folks who are the experts in this area, the psychologists, the nurses, the counselors themselves, and see what they say. I think it's essential that we have qualified, trained people in these positions and that we not lower our standards. So I'd be skeptical of that, but I think we should discuss it. But the main point, I don't think we should lose sight of the fact, is we just don't have enough money. We haven't appropriated enough money to hire enough people to do this very important job.
And before we move on, Becky, I do want to ask you, what about the money? I mean, $130 million is the governor's proposal. What are the chances, you think, that in this short session coming up, the legislature will seriously look at that, at lawmakers?
They're already seriously looking at it. Now, whether it'll be $130 or whether it'll be $100 or whether it'll be $200, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows at this point. I think they're still gathering information and getting some good, solid figures on those things and looking at other innovative ways to come at this problem as well.
North Carolina continues to lag behind the rest of the nation when it comes to teacher pay. The most recent report from the National Education Association ranks the state 37th in terms of teacher pay, though the average teacher salary is now above $50,000. So, Rob, good news or bad news there?
I don't really think it's any particular news at all. I think it's we're still near the bottom. I suppose there's been a small bump in teacher pay, but here's the apt comparison, because this study really loses that, I think. The apt comparison is not how we compare to other states and the teachers, you know, what they make in Virginia and South Carolina, because that's not, for the most part, where our teachers go when they leave the profession. They leave it to go to work in the private sector in North Carolina. And when you look at it that way, North Carolina ranks about 49th in the country when you compare what teachers in North Carolina make to what college-educated peers, you know, the same level of experience make in the private sector in North Carolina. They make about 65% of what people make in the private sector when you compare the number of years out of school. So, you know, 39th is better than whatever we were, 43rd or 45th in the NEA rankings, but it's still not getting to the real issue because the real competition comes from the private sector, not from other states.
Well, and, you know, people make professional decisions all the time based on all kinds of things. And, you know, a lot of the surveys and all that we've done of teachers indicate that, yes, salary is a factor, but there's lots of other factors involved as well. But we continue to talk about these rankings. And, you know, just a couple things. This NEA ranking does not adjust for cost of living. So when you adjust for cost of living, you know, it's not really comparing apples to apples when you compare teacher pay in New York to North Carolina or other parts of the country. When you adjust for the cost of living, North Carolina's rank actually jumps to 29th in the nation. So, you know, you have to be careful with these rankings and what you compare. The other thing, another point I think that needs to be made is, Rusty, as you mentioned, our average teacher pay is now $50,000. We also have very generous benefit packages for our teachers and state employees. Not all states have that. And that benefit package comes out to about $17,000 a year. So, you know, add that to the compensation package just, you know, to get a realistic look at how these things are going. The other thing is North Carolina is projected to have the second highest increase in education spending this year. So, yeah, we're trying to catch up, but this is after years of Democrat leadership and Republican leadership of increasing teacher pay. So I think we're on the right track. I think we still have a long way to go. But I also think that looking at things outside of just salary is important. You know, getting some of these restrictions, this over-testing that I think we do in North Carolina, allow teachers to do what they do best, and that's to teach kids in classrooms.
But I do think there's a reason that applicants for education schools have dried up in North Carolina, why there's less interest in entering teaching, and that's because people perceive, and I think correctly, that there's been a war on public education in the last several years in North Carolina. There's been a systematic defunding of public education where per pupil spending is way down below where it was when the Republicans took over at the beginning of the decade. And, you know, that hasn't really changed. And we've just been talking about counselors and psychologists all the other essential staff in the schools that have also been underfunded. Our principals are like at the bottom of the pay chart nationally as well. Nobody has any illusion that North Carolina is spending generously on public education, and that filters down. People know it's not a career they want to pursue because they're worried about making adequate wages. They realize that it's going to be a struggle, that the schools are going to be underfunded. They're not going to have adequate facilities. All that contributes to the fact that we're not attracting the kinds of applicants for jobs that we should in public education.
Former Governor Pat McCrory is using his perch as a conservative talk radio host to criticize Governor Roy Cooper's administration for the slow pace of doling out federal disaster relief funds to Hurricane Matthew victims. Last week, state emergency management officials came under fire for the same reasons, basically the failure to administer $236 million in relief money. Rob, fair criticism?
Well, I think we talked about this last week, and actually, I don't think it is for the most part. The Cooper administration has actually gotten hundreds of millions of dollars out the door, despite the fact that at the end of the 2017 legislative session, the 2016 session, the end of the McCrory administration, they actually put all these roadblocks in place by switching who had responsibility for affordable housing from the Department of Commerce over to the emergency management folks. They got rid of the CDCs that were the sort of eyes and ears on the ground for developing affordable housing in areas like that were affected by the hurricane. So Cooper came into office just after the hurricane had hit, had to essentially recreate the infrastructure for getting the money out. was met with, you know, obstruction from the GOP legislature right from the get-go on everything he was trying to do. I think he's been doing his best. There's clearly a lot more work to be done. There probably is some criticism that could be leveled, but I don't think for the most part you can blame Governor Cooper for what has been a team effort when it comes to not being completely satisfactory and completely successful with our hurricane relief efforts.
I think the criticism is fair. I think that Governor Cooper needs to answer for this. We've got $236.5 million grant from the federal government that is just sitting there and has been for the last year and a half. Yeah, there were some changes. I think that moving these responsibilities from the Department of Commerce under the Emergency Management Agency is the was and is the right thing to do when you're recovering from a hurricane. So I think those changes were done to make things run smoother. I don't know. I mean, I'm just puzzled as to why this money has not been done. South Carolina got the money. They've already rebuilt houses, businesses for people that victims of the hurricane. North Carolina's done nothing. And I think Roy Cooper has to answer for this.
They've done nothing? They've got $630 million out in a fortnight.
Of the $236 million that they got in these federal grants, none of that money has been spent.
Much of the $630 million was federal money as well. So you just can't say that they haven't doled out any federal money. I mean,
of this fund that we're talking about, the $237 million grant from the Department of Housing and Urban Development has not been spent in North Carolina. There are people that have been homeless for 18 months because of this kind of thing. South Carolina has been able to get that money to the people that need it. North Carolina hasn't. And I think the criticism of Roy Cooper's treatment of this is right. And I hope that with this reporting, as Rob said, we talked about this last week. We've seen it in the newspaper. Lots of people are talking about this. I hope that this is going to be, former Governor McCrory's criticism of this, I hope this is going to be something that will get the Cooper administration moving on this. One of the things that McCrory said, too, that I think is significant, he offered to come step in and help. He also suggested bringing other governors, former Governor Beverly Perdue, Mike Easley, you know, bring all the governors together that have had experience with hurricane recovery and get this money to the people that need it.
Well, maybe Governor McCrory's feeling a little guilty about having ruined the infrastructure that existed for delivering this money. I just don't think this is fair at all to blame Governor.
Ruining the, you know, changing from the Department of Commerce to the Emergency Management
Agency. From
agency.
People who had a long experience in developing affordable housing and giving it to people who have publicly admitted. Now, the people running emergency management are people who are holding over from the McCrory administration. And they said, we don't know how to do this. This wasn't something that was in our job description.
It should be pointed out that Sprayberry, the point man for the administration, was a McCrory.
He's been appointee. There since 2013.
Right.
And so he ought to know how to do these things, too. So anyway, bottom line is people in the eastern part of North Carolina need help, and there's money there to do it, and we need to get it to them.
Becky Gray, Senior Vice President at the Conservative John Locke Foundation, and Rob Schofield, Director of the Progressive NC Policy Watch. Again, have a great weekend, and thank you both.
Thanks, Rusty.